As I mentioned a little bit earlier, we are talking today about God's presence. We're talking about the presence of God, God of presence. We're in this series where we're looking at different aspects of God, different ways of looking at God, different angles on God, if you like. It's called partial perspectives because we recognize that there's many different perspectives. And there's no one right perspective. But we've all got something to learn from one another. So you may remember that we've been going through the series. There's sort of 6 weeks to the series, 6 aspects to this. And we've been talking about God of good news, God of intimacy, compassion, integrity, today's presence, and then next week we'll talk about power. I think just to sort of put some of this in context, I think if last week, maybe we can leave that slide up. Last week, Ruth talked about integrity. The week before that, Brian talked about compassion. And I think, you know, if we think about it, those are two very practical ways in which we embody the life of God. No matter what we think, what we believe, what we claim to believe, if we're not living at this sort of personal level of integrity, if our lives don't matter, the way we live doesn't matter, if we're not embodying something of the divine presence, individually, and then experiencing that and expressing that in our culture. You know, we talked about in the week on compassion, social justice, how that sense of integrity, if you like, is all about how we live together as well as how we live as individuals. If those two things aren't becoming real in our lives, then, it's almost like, does anything else particularly matter? So those are two, I think, really crucial things. We talked at the beginning about how this God of good news, how the good news is that God is love. So that love embodied in us is what's flowing out to the world. It's what's flowing to us, through us, and then out to the world. And we talked in week two about the fact that this was the week we got snowed out. We talked about the fact that God, to experience the intimacy of God. And you can see how this week, that week, intimacy and presence this week are kind of connected. And they're perhaps the two sides of the same coin. But in that week too, we were thinking about the fact that God's bigger than we can imagine, bigger than perhaps we can even think or experience, bigger than we can think or feel. So somehow we have to transcend what might seem to be our human limitations, but perhaps we're not quite as limited as we thought, in order to access the fullness of God, the fullness of the divine. And we talked there about perhaps minimizing our senses, you know, sort of not doing away with them, but trying to transcend our senses to experience something that we can't taste, we can't feel, we can't touch, we can't kind of put in a box. Whereas this week, what we're saying is, well, we are sensual beings. We have feelings. We see and we taste and we touch and we smell, some of us. And we can. That's all as much part of the divine reality as the non-sensual pieces. So we're going to focus today on what we call the sacramental tradition, which is really this tradition that says, is it possible to engage with the material world very intentionally in order to access this much larger reality, this much bigger reality, this divine reality. So that's how some of this all kind of fits together and where we find ourselves this week talking about God of presence. Before we sort of get into that, I want to talk a little bit, and this might sound awfully pretentious on a Sunday morning, but I want to talk a little bit about the nature of reality, right? Who am I to talk about that? I mean, do any of us really understand reality? Something that I think about a lot is the fact that it's almost like we, as a human race, it's like we've woken up in the middle of the night and we don't know where we've been, where we're going to, where we've come from. You know, it's like that dark night and we're sort of stumbling in the dark. I've been going back and forth to England a lot recently because of my parents not being too well. And made quite a few trips in a relatively short number of months, and I'm still a little bit jet-lagged, not sleeping too well, and sometimes I wake up and I don't, am I in England? Am I in America? What time is it? And it can be somewhat confusing. Many of you may have had experiences like that. Well, isn't it incredible that really as a human race, that to some degree is our experience? On the one hand, we have this incredible knowledge about our world and ability to control our environment, you know, to the point where we've extracted resources purely from the earth that have enabled us, we've manipulated them in order to get off the planet. We've got people on the moon. We've sent We've got actually, you know, machines of ours that have gone beyond our own solar system. We're able to receive messages and interpret data from beyond our solar system, beyond our galaxy even. I mean, it's just unbelievable. But we still really aren't quite sure, how did it all begin? Where have we come from? And obviously science speaks to that and religion speaks to that kind of thing. But nobody really is speaking with any categorical, this is absolutely what happened, right? I mean, there's some, I think, some really helpful and very believable theories, right? But even when it comes down to the very first few microseconds of the universe, there's a whole bunch of mystery there. And we don't really know where we're going. In other words, what happens after we die? I mean, the mystery of that. And where is the planet headed? Where's the universe headed? I mean, we can make calculations about all kinds of things, but what... And really, are we, how significant are we when we're this sort of, you know, if we're fortunate, we may live 70 or 80 years in the context of 13.8 billion. I mean, it's like we've woken up in the middle of the night, we don't really know. And we've sort of, we've become conscious. I know who my parents were, I know who my parents' parents were, but then somewhere back in that history, I kind of lose track, and then we have books where we kind of trace the history. But eventually, it's mystery, right? It fades away into mystery. So we're constantly, I think, trying to wrestle with what is this universe of ours? What is reality? What does it all mean? I want to propose, and obviously I'm coming here from a religious perspective here and the way we look at reality. I'm going to propose perhaps a contrary idea, and this is, you know, a lot of people think this isn't a particularly novel idea, but it's contrary to perhaps how we've traditionally thought about reality from a religious or a spiritual point of view. I think we tend to think religiously that there are sort of two worlds, two realities, if you like. There's the reality of matter, which we can taste and see and touch and feel, you know, the material world, and there's the spiritual world. And it's like God lives in that spiritual world, we're in the material world, and we're constantly trying to get into that spiritual world, we're trying to invoke God to be present in our material world. But those two worlds are very separate. There's matter and humanity on one side, and there's God and spirituality on the other side. And we kind of even tend to think of the material world as not quite as good as the spiritual world. We might even think of it as bad. You know, we say things like, you know, I just need to let my humanity get out of the way so that God can flow more freely through me. Like, as if really our humanity, our material nature is somehow unclean or not right, and we really need more of the spiritual dimension. I'm not trying to... you know, that may be the prevailing belief for many of us here, and I'm not trying to say that's wrong, but another way of looking at it is to think about it as though there's only really one reality, that matter, the material world, and the spiritual world are all part of one reality. It's whole. And that reality is experienced to varying degrees by us as conscious beings, right? We have a much fuller experience of the material aspect of that reality, right? We're conscious that we're sat here on chairs listening to somebody go on and on about the nature of reality right now in this moment. We can sort of relate more to that, but there's another reality, or let's say a bigger element to that reality, a more full aspect to that reality, which we find harder to connect to, much harder. But perhaps rather than it being separate, it's just part of this reality, we just struggle to experience it. Now, I think we, in some senses, we get that is the case. So let's think about it in terms of who we're following, Jesus. Jesus said in John chapter 17, he talked about oneness. He says, my prayer is not for them alone. I pray also for those who will believe in me through their message, that all of them may be one, Father, just as you are in me. So we're talking about, he's talking about divine reality here, right? You are in me, and he's talking about himself as a human being, and I am in you. May they also be in us, so that the world may believe that you have sent me. I've given them the glory that you gave me, that they may be one as we are one. I in them and you in me, so that they may be brought to complete unity. Then the world will know that you sent me and have loved them even as I have loved you. So this, I think we get that this reality is that Jesus taught about is it is one reality. Jesus, you know, there's perhaps two ways of looking at Jesus. One is that Jesus was this sort of being that came from this other reality, and you know, so is kind of God in a human shell, or Jesus is this fully enlightened human being who is operating in the fullness of this reality. We'll talk about that a little bit more in a moment, that Jesus wasn't just operating in the material world. He wasn't just confined to the material world. He's living like this whole reality is very real. And that whole reality, as we're reading in that passage, is based on love, right? Love is the currency of that reality. Love is the currency of the material world, the spiritual world. It's the currency of everything. And so love is how the universe works. And when love is absent, or when we go against love, it's like it creates friction. It's like the gears start crunching, and it feels dark. And there is a reality of dark and evil in the world. It's the absence of love. It's when we're not obeying the rules of the universe, if you like. We're not operating according to this much bigger, beautiful reality. Jesus seemed to get that, and Jesus kind of lived that way, right? We saw a few weeks ago when we looked at the beginning of Mark's gospel, we saw all this imagery about heaven being torn open. So like the heavenly world and the earthly world are one world. It's as though our eyes are suddenly open to the reality of that. Jesus is full of the Spirit of God. There's either a symbolic kind of dove that descends, or that might be just the way they're describing it, or something visual happens. You know, there's this sort of material manifestation of this bigger spiritual reality, and we see those two things coming together: spirit and matter, heaven and earth. And Jesus is embodying that in love. So that's, you know, so we, as followers of Jesus, it does seem that this reality is one reality. I think we also get it, really, if we think about it scientifically. Our sort of symbol for this series is light, refracted light, right? We've got that sort of prism there. We all, I think, see that as how white light really is composed of many different colors. Well, let's look at that a little bit more intently. We have the electromagnetic spectrum here. That's what we see. It's what we perceive. But it's just a tiny fraction of a much larger reality. Right now, I'm not saying that God is in the X-rays and gamma rays, and I'm just trying to, you know, I'm not saying that God is the mystery that we just can't explain in the universe. What I mean is, clearly, I think we get the fact that we don't understand or sense, perceive most of what is going on around us, most of our reality, and most of our reality we're blind to. The good news is, and this is, I think, where we get into this, the power of sacraments, is that we have used our own senses to develop ways to detect the things that are undetectable or unperceivable, right? We can detect gamma rays. We can detect radio waves. So it doesn't mean that those are inaccessible to us, but we've had to use the parts of our experience, the parts of our reality that we can experience in order to access that fuller reality. Same is true about the universe in general. If you think about maybe we could do the next slide. If you think about this one is, you know, it's hard to get your head around, and I'm not gonna for 1 minute talk about dark energy like I know anything about it whatsoever. But suffice it to say that only 5% of our universe is kind of normal matter. In other words, the vast majority of our universe, we don't even know what it is. We can't detect it. We just know it must be there, because the universe would operate in a completely different way if it wasn't. And you know, a lot of that's wrapped up in dark matter. Some of that energy is just out there as dark energy. So there's a whole bunch of our universe that we don't understand. We don't perceive even. It's not just that we don't understand it. It's like we don't even know where it is or how to measure it. We just know it's there. Now, again, I'm not saying, oh, God is in the dark energy, God is in the dark matter. What I'm saying is there's a bigger reality, and we only get to experience some of it. We're only experiencing some of it. Now, why is this important? Why is this issue of the reality, the nature of a reality being whole, important? I want to just sort of address that for a moment, because we could ask ourselves, so what? Well, I think it's really crucial to this issue of God as presence, or the presence of God. That if we think of two realities, then we're forever begging a divine being to sort of come into our reality, and we perceive God perhaps as absent from our material world and needs to come into our material world. But perhaps if this reality is all one, then God is vibrantly present in the material world. It's not separate. It's not disconnected from the spiritual realm, or what we might call the spiritual realm. And again, I don't think we should worry about thinking, well, there are certain things that are more material and certain things that are more spiritual. There are differences there, clearly, but they're not separate. They're interdependent. They're connected. They're like two sides to the same coin. And when we separate them, I think what we do is we put God over there and us over here, and we have a big problem, because then we've got to try and persuade God to be with us. And we try to pursue God, and that causes, I think, a lot of tension. I think, you know, I experienced that personally, and I think from talking with a lot of people, just from a pastoral angle, that's true for a lot of people. It's also a problem, I think, because as I mentioned earlier, I think we tend to downplay, if not actually criticize our humanity of the material world, right? If we're not careful, we frown upon it, and we miss the reality that actually, as Einstein said, we can live life as though nothing is a miracle, or as though everything is a miracle. In this unified sense of reality, resurrection is as much a miracle as Krebs cycle. I think we've got a picture of Krebs cycle, right? I mean, we're not even going to get into Krebs cycle today, right? The citric acid cycle, but that's how energy is being created in every single one of us right now. That's a very physical, material, concrete thing. It's that not a miracle? I mean, that's a miracle. I think resurrection and healing and the sort of things that we associate with the other world, perhaps they're as real. Perhaps even there is explainable. It's just we don't really get it yet. We haven't really become enlightened enough to really access that aspect of reality fully, for all kinds of reasons. But this, thinking of everything as a miracle, thinking of life as a whole, the universe as a whole, really, what it does is it does away with this need for like magic. Right, it does away with the need for, well, you know, things like healing and resurrection. They're just these other things that are sort of remote from us that sometimes happen, sometimes don't. It's up to a decision from a being from another reality whether that's going to happen or not. Perhaps it's just we haven't explored the depths of that enough yet. We just don't understand it enough. It's accessible. It's here. It's present. It's like that dark energy that's. We just don't understand it. And Jesus comes kind of luring us, encouraging us into that dimension, saying it's possible to live differently. Really Jesus affirms our humanity. In the beginning of Genesis, when we read those creation accounts, however you take those, whether you take those literally or figuratively, in Genesis it says that when God had created the earth, created this material world, God saw all that he made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. So I guess what I'm getting at here is that the material world, what we might call the spiritual world, are one, and they are all good. They are all miraculous. They are all beautiful. We just struggle because we only see a little piece of it. We only perceive a little piece of it. Now, I think there's another aspect to this, a challenging aspect, and it's the issue of depth, right? Really what we're saying is there's a deeper reality out there than most of us are aware of, right? I don't think that should be too much of a surprise. That we just experience a little bit of it. And perhaps the challenge of Jesus is a call into the depths of life, the depths of this reality. And that, as I said, is probably not too much of a surprise to us, because we all experience that to some degree, right? Life is deeper than we at first thought it was. You think about relationships, right? We engage in a relationship, and at some point in any relationship, something happens. Either we start thinking, I really like this person, and I'm not talking just about romantic relationships, I'm talking about any relationship. something happens, you think, I really like this person, and you decide, I want to go deeper, I want to experience more of that person, I want to find out more about them, and perhaps I want them to get to know me a bit better. Or there's some conflict, right? It might be not so much, I really like this person, and now we have a decision. Do we want to explore that conflict? Do we want to find out why, you know, I thought I got on with that person, but now I'm not really getting on with them. Do I want to explore it? Do I want to go deeper? So at this relational level, there's clearly a depth to reality. There's a depth to our human experience, a depth to reality. That's very real to us. And we experience it personally, right? There's more to us than meets the eye. There's more to us than meets our own eye. You think about yourself 20 years ago, you have, a deeper understanding, a deeper experience of yourself now than you had 20 years ago. We experience, as we just mentioned earlier, in science, right? The deeper we go into reality, actually the weirder it gets, right? It gets very weird. Things like can start appearing, things can be in two places at the same time. Things on complete opposite sides of the universe can be have some kind of memory. Particles have memory, it seems like. Particles can behave like waves and particles at the same time. Particles behave differently when you're looking at them and when you're not. I mean, that's pretty weird, right? So there's a depth to our understanding scientifically of reality that we're very aware of. We see it in society, right? Society we know is complex. It's more than the sum of its parts. So when there's injustice, for instance, when love is not working, and there's the crunching of the brakes, the gears, the friction that's caused by the lack of love, it's very complex. And if we skim over the surface and apply simple surface solutions, we don't really get the outcomes that we're looking for. So there's this depth to life. Now, a famous theologian philosopher, Rudolf Otto, where do you think he came from? Germany. You've got to come from Germany with a name like Rudolf Otto. He wrote a book back about 100 years ago now, actually. He's dead, but he wrote a very famous book called The Idea of the Holy. And he used this Latin term for the idea of God. He said it's a mysterium tremendum et fascinans. In other words, God is this mystery that's both tremendous or perhaps a little scary, and fascinans, fascinating, alluring. So in other words, there's this mystery of God, which, you know, and I think this sort of relates to this issue of depth. You may be familiar with a theologian called Paul Tillich. He wrote a lot about this issue of depth and perhaps depth, the depth to life being in some way a way of understanding the divine, a way of understanding God. But this idea of the mystery of God being both frightening and alluring or beautiful is, I think, again, something we experience around this issue of depth. We want depth, right? We want to experience life deeply. We want to experience relationships deeply, meaningfully. We want to be known. There's something very unsatisfying about skipping over the surface of life. And perhaps the journey of life is really, and I think this is what Jesus did, Jesus called us to, this journey of life is this call to go deeper, this invitation to experience more of the depths of life. But it's frightening to do that. Do we really want to know ourselves? Do we really want to be known? Do we really want to know that other person? Do we really want to get into all that conflict? Do we want to address the challenges of society? Do we want to address the challenges in our own life? I mean, it's very easy for that to end up being frightening. And yet, at the same time, it's fascinating. There's a longing in us. We're drawn to that depth. We're drawn to it. And I would say that draw, that sense of longing that we have, is this longing for the depths of this reality, a fuller experience of the reality of God. And we see that in Jesus's life, right? Jesus explored the depths of reality. Jesus lived this out in beautiful ways. We see in John chapter 1, I'm going to quote a couple of scriptures here that we often talk about at Christmas, because They're related to incarnation, the sort of the expression of divinity in the material world. In this case, in the form of an actual human being, Jesus. The Word became flesh and made his dwelling among us. We have seen his glory, the glory of the one and only Son, who came from the Father, full of grace and truth. Let's just leave that there for a second. The Word became flesh. So this is the mystery of the universe, the Logos, the mystery of the universe, becoming flesh, becoming material. It's the material expression of divine fullness. And there's this reference to glory. We're going to touch on that in just one second. What the heck is glory? But there's Jesus coming in grace and truth. There's this sense of acceptance. This is the nature of love. Grace, full acceptance. Full acceptance. So it's like an invitation to depth. But truth as well. So in the context of that grace, there's the opportunity to be really honest. Because love is not always present, right? Things need to change. But they can only change in the presence of grace. The invitation to depth is only viable because of grace. The invitation to depth is only viable because of truth. There is a way forward. There is healing. There is change is possible. Right, but if we don't have grace and we don't have truth, none of this, we can't go deep. We can't experience the depth of reality. And I think what the writer here is saying is Jesus embodies grace and truth. In another Johannine scripture, in the first letter that's credited to John, again, we read this at Christmas, right? That which was from the beginning, which we've heard, which we've seen with our eyes, which we've looked at with our hands, which we have looked at and our hands have touched, this we proclaim concerning the word of life. The life appeared, we have seen it, we testify to it, and we proclaim to you the eternal life which was with the Father and has appeared to us. We can just leave that there for now. But we've seen it, we've touched it. There's this sense that Jesus is this way of experiencing a fuller reality, he's the example. He's calling us into this depth that we all really long for. That's one way we can engage as physical, material human beings with this bigger dimension, this bigger reality. But it also says in the scriptures in Isaiah, right at the beginning of Isaiah, it's chapter 6, this is a sort of prelude to the book of Isaiah, then it really kind of kicks in and gets going when Isaiah the prophet has this vision, and this is a very mysterious, otherworldly kind of vision that he has, but there's something very real about it. In the year that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord high and exalted, seated on a throne, and the train of his robe filled the temple. Above him were seraphim, each with 6 wings. With 2 wings they covered their faces. With 2 they covered their feet. With 2 they were flying. And they were calling to one another. So this sounds very otherworldly, right? And many images in the Bible have metaphors. You know, there are metaphors and symbols and images that feel very otherworldly to describe the reality that we find so hard to perceive, so hard to understand. They were calling to one another, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord Almighty." We sang this earlier. The whole earth is full of his glory. And then there's a bunch of shaking and different things like that. That word glory, we saw that in the scripture on John, right? That we talked about, Jesus was described as sort of the manifestation of glory. That word glory, in the Hebrew, it's a word that means, it's kavod is the word. It means weight, weightiness. It's not ethereal. It's related to matter. It's related to concrete reality. That sense, then, the glory of God is not separate from the material world. That this is all part of one whole reality. So we can experience the glory of the divine in matter, in the concrete world. And this is where we come to this whole issue of the sacraments, what we experienced a little bit earlier. And I don't want to labor this too long, because we talked a little bit about this at the beginning of the service. But the sacramental way, sometimes called the incarnational way, because it's saying, it's dealing with the real present reality of that we experience, is really, I would describe it like this. It's a desire, an attempt, an intention to engage with the material world in order that we might access this fuller reality, right? And as I mentioned earlier, we've got, maybe we can put that slide up again, we've got all those sacraments historically that we've, the Catholic Church has sort of made, these are very sort of practical, real things. They're a little inconsistent, like baptism, that feels very physical in the sense of water and that kind of thing. Confession, that doesn't feel quite so concrete. So, we could critique this list all day. I'm just saying that is the list, right? Those are what the church said. These are the seven sacraments. These are ways that we want to access God. Different traditions, pretty much the Protestants boiled that down to baptism and communion, really. And then some other traditions added in things like foot washing, or you take the Quakers, which they don't practice communion because they would say every time we eat, we celebrate the presence of God. I think there's something very beautiful about that, actually. Obviously, the ritual of communion is one thing, but to celebrate the presence of God every time we eat on our own or with another person, there's some power in that, I think. At Cedar Ridge, and again, this is somewhat arbitrary, I just took a stab at what are some of our sacraments. Well, we do communion every week. I mean, that's a sacrament, I would say, for us. Somebody said to me this morning, coffee is a sacrament. And I think that we had a problem with the coffee this morning, right? And we knew we had to have a backup plan, because without coffee, there's no church, right? So maybe coffee is a sacrament. But we also practice baptism, right? And I mentioned earlier, there's some handouts over at that station there. If you want to get baptized, we'd love to hear from you. We'll be baptizing people in a few weeks. And then we've got things like membership. Is that really a sacrament? But we take that kind of seriously. It's sort of a community commitment to one another. That's perhaps a little bit like confirmation, perhaps a little bit like baptism. In the Catholic tradition, if you're baptized into the church. It's that sort of membership of the church. And then servanthood is a big deal for us, right? Again, somewhat arbitrary list, not really trying to make too big a deal of this, but we sometimes will make servanthood the whole focus of our service, right? We do these days of service, and we call that worship. We call that, the engagement with other people, serving other people, is a way that we can experience the divine in a deeper way, and perhaps others can experience the divine through us as well. But I think that kind of gives us a little bit of a cue into this concept of the sacrament of the present moment, right? There's some ancient traditions that really value the sacrament of the present moment, this sense that perhaps everything is a sacrament. And that's the point I want to get to here, just to sort of wrap up, is that God is present in this whole world, in everything that we experience. God is present. Now, that doesn't mean everything's good. We talked earlier about the way of the universe is love, but that God's way, the divine way, if you like, God's will, is not always being done. That's why Jesus said, pray, your will be done on earth as it is in heaven. In other words, on earth as it is in this bigger dimension. May our material world, may our relationships and our social structures and everything in between be operating in the way of love, rather than in all the ways that grind against it and create darkness and fear and anti-love. So saying that God is present in the world is not saying that the world is necessarily an easy place or always a good place. But what it does mean is the counter to that lack of love, that anti-love, the lack of goodness, is not more of that. It's the way of love, right? So we counter evil with good. We counter violence with love. We counter hatred with love. This is the only way. And in fact, here's perhaps an even bigger mystery. Somehow, it's through failure and suffering and pain that we often experience depth opening up for us, right? It's as we engage with those kinds of difficult things in the universe that perhaps it's the sacrament, if you like, of pain, the sacrament of loss, that we begin to see the potential for depth. It's that that draws us into, I want something more, I want something different. Again, I think we can pull back from it and try and live as shallow as we can, go as fast as we can across the surface. But the invitation is to experience something more beautiful, more profound, more divine. That's the invitation. I think this idea of the sacrament of the present moment is a gift to us. It's the fact that through the person we're sat next to, through my work, through art, through story, through all the beautiful things in the world, nature, the mystery and wonder of science, all of these things are not to be feared or recoiled from. We should, with grace and truth, dive into those things and explore the depths of them in order to experience the depths of God. And they're wonderful opportunities to us, right? So we, you know, we kind of make them a bit religious at times, like we, you know, things like communion. I mean, it's interesting that that other list that we had, here's some sacrament of the present moment or more everyday sacraments. That previous list, you pretty much have to go to church to experience it, right? That's probably why the church made that list, let's face it. Jesus comes along healing people and forgiving people left, right, and center out on the streets. Jesus, he wasn't against the temple. He wasn't anti-religious, but he's just like, hey, God's here, God's present, and let me lead you into this fuller, more divine reality. So I think that, and we have discussion questions this week which explore this a little bit. There's different ways that we experience the divine, I think. We all lean to different sacraments, different traditional sacraments, different sacraments of the present moment. And that's really good. And I think we should pursue those. And like, you know, if you experience God through music, through art, through literature, through science, through nature, through other people, through relationships, through food, let's go for it. Let's plunge into those depths. But also maybe we can experience God through some other ways that we haven't really thought of. Perhaps there are other elements, and again, there's some questions that sort of allude to this, and we can share with one another different ways that we've experienced God in order to go deeper, right? And so to wrap up here, and we're going to close out with a song, I just want to ask a question, really, that maybe we can sit with a bit as we go from here and as we go about our business. And that is this: are we afraid of depth, or are we diving in? Are we staying on the surface, whether that's in a relationship, in our own personal world? Maybe it's around our theology, our understanding of God. Maybe things aren't working out. It doesn't all add up, and we're afraid of exploring it because it might create some problems for us. Maybe we're just sort of keeping things at bay and just getting by. Or are we following Jesus into the depths of reality, the depths of the experience of this world that can cue us in and give us access to something so much more profound? So I think that question is probably relevant for all of us at some level in different aspects of our lives. And I think what I would encourage all of us to say is to acknowledge the presence of God and then say yes. You know, Jesus explored those depths even to the point of death. And actually, in that deep exploration of grace and truth, experienced resurrection, the mystery of resurrection. Jesus, in the depths of his experience of reality, kind of got to manipulate matter, if you think about it. We could just write the miracles off as, well, it's just stories. We could write the resurrection off as just stories. I personally don't. I think Jesus actually came back from the dead, because I think Jesus was engaged in a much bigger reality than we really understand. A reality in which matter behaves really weirdly. And we know some of that already. So do we want more of that, or do we want to just stay put? Do we want to see the world transformed, or just rearrange the furniture a little bit? Do we want to go really deep, or do we want to stay on the surface? And that can be a very patronizing statement or question to ask, right? Do you want to be deep? I don't mean it like that. I just mean it personally for each one of us. So let's stand together, and we're going to sing this song, and let's just let that question sort of sit with us a little bit, and then we'll close out.